Robinhood bietet Ihnen Zugang zum US-Aktienmarkt. Sie können Krypto zu niedrigen Kosten kaufen und verkaufen. Alles an einem Ort. Auf Robinhood. Investment- und Kryptowertedienstleistungen für EU-Kunden werden von der Robinhood Europe UAB angeboten, die von der Zentralbank Litauens als Finanzmakler und Kryptowertedienstleister zugelassen ist und deren Aufsicht unterliegt. Termingeschäfte auf US-Aktien und ETF-Token bergen ein erhebliches Risiko und sind nicht für alle Anleger geeignet. Bitte überlegen Sie sich sorgfältig, ob Investments in derartige Finanzinstrumente mit Blick auf Ihre Erfahrung, Risikotoleranz und Finanzlage für Sie geeignet sind. Beachten Sie die geltenden Beschränkungen und Zulassungsvoraussetzungen.
Bundesliga von Sky Sport mit Wow. Jetzt bei Prime Video. Die Freitags- und Samstagsspiele der Bundesliga live. Ab 29,99 € monatlich streamen. Buche jetzt Wow bei Prime Video. Im 12-Monats-Vertrag. Nach 12 Monaten läuft es als monatliches Abonnement weiter. 44,99 € pro Monat.
All right, let's do this. How are you, what the fuckers, what the fuck buddies, what the fuck nicks, what's happening? I'm Mark Maron. This is my podcast. Welcome to it. How are you? What's going on? What is going on? I've been immersed for what seems to be a year and a half. I have been immersed in heading towards this special taping. I've got no more dates to announce. I've got nothing. I've got nothing but this and you and some promotions to do, for a lot of things. I've got things happening, but I mean, what am I going to do comedically? I just did it. I did it, and it went well. You know, I could be a little self-conscious and a little diminishing and a little dismissive of myself, but I think it went very well. It's weird. It almost happens in a dream. I'll try to tell you about it. I will try to tell you about it. Today on the show, I talked to Bridget Everett. She's the star and executive producer of the HBO series Somebody Somewhere. She got her start in the New York cabaret scene. And I'll be honest with you, when I got the opportunity to interview Bridget, I didn't really know her. I didn't know the show, but I knew she was a thing. I knew the show was a thing for some people. So I was like, okay, sure. You know, Brendan told me she got started in, you know, cabaret. And I was like, all right, well, that's close to comedy. All right, fine. And then I started watching the show, Somebody Somewhere. And what a great show. What a great show. You look, I don't know if it's for everybody. I'm not even sure why it's for me. But I started watching it and I was locked in. I loved her. I loved her character. I loved the comedy of it. I loved the other characters. I was crying. I was laughing. I was invested emotionally. I watched it like nonstop all the way through all three seasons. She just got me, man. I mean, I just couldn't pull away from it. I just thought it was so beautiful and human and interesting and, you know, eclectic and diverse and there's something about her character that I obviously identified with emotionally. And man, did we have a conversation. I can't explain it. Sometimes I just feel so connected to somebody's character, but she's a lot like the character. It's basically her. But, you know, we got into some other stuff. But I was just so surprised and excited to be so emotionally torn up and entertained by that show. It's a big talk, and it was really great. For me, I think it was for her. I think we kind of ended kind of amazed at ourselves. So New York City, I just got back. And look, we made it through this long run, you know, from a week ago Friday through, you know, Toronto and Vermont, Portsmouth, New Hampshire. That show went great. And then like I drove down, we had a rent a car, me and Kathy Ladman, who was opening for me. She did great on the special and on all the shows. We drove down from Portsmouth to Boston, flew to New York. We made it. I didn't lose anything else. I got home. My computer was back, which was nice. And my cats hadn't shit anywhere. And there was limited cat drama. I don't know how it worked out. You know, the woman who watches my cats, she bought them a bunch of toys. She exhausted them every night. She was giving them the Zilkine or Charlie and some probiotic calming stuff. It seems like him and Buster are kind of at it again, but no shit. I mean, no shit, which was really nice to come home to. Now I got to, you know, wait for 3 days for them all to calm the fuck down and realize I'm back in charge. I've got it. I'm the king. I'm the alpha of you three little fucks. Sammy, I'm not even sure Sammy knows me. So I got to tell you, man, the special looks stunning. All the people at the Bam Harvey were just great. And that theater is such a special place. I can't even explain it to you. You'll see it on the special, but it was built in like the early 1900s. And instead of renovating it, they kind of preserved it in its decay. So it has a sort of personality that you don't see much in theaters that old, because most of the time they get flipped. They get renovated. Many places renovate them appropriately to the time or restore the stuff that was there. But this place, the Harvey, is completely unique in that it has kind of broken down a bit. It's almost a bit of a ruin in a way. So they just let that be, and they just kind of maintain it. They didn't, you know, restore it per se. They honor what it is, and it's got an incredible personality. And when I first went to the place and I saw the back wall of the theater that I believe still had paint on it from somewhere back in the early 1900s, and the whole back of the theater, as I might have said before, looked like a piece of art to me, like a Rothko painting or something kind of, it was chipped away. It had different colors, different tones. And I'm like, we're using that wall. And my production designer, Mark Janowitz, it was like, he got it right away. And he started talking to me. I don't know if I told you guys this, but he started talking to me about, I think it's called Kintsugi. It's a Japanese art. They take old ceramics, bowls and pieces, vases, and they repair them meticulously using gold to bond it back together. So it's a completely new thing. And there was something that Mark saw in the theater where he was like, Kintsugi. And I'm like, what is that? And he says, it's this Japanese art form, you know, where they put ceramics back together with gold. And I'm like, okay, do it. Run with it, dude. I love collaborating with people. So he had this whole concept, and I didn't know necessarily how it fit into the special, but it certainly felt it fit into the vibe of the room. So he kind of based his vision for the production design around this Kintsugi, and he created lights and little gobos, maybe, where, you know, the Kintsugi patterns were sort of around, and the carpet on the stage, we put a stage in, and the lighting was warm, and it really made the Bam Harvey shine. What a beautiful theater. But, you know, with the lights and everything, it was just stunning. It was almost like, why ruin it with my comedy? And so I got there on Friday, we were taping on Saturday, and, you know, I watched them, you know, put a lot of the stuff up and start to get the vibe. And then I went back over there on Saturday to do sound checks and feel the room and, you know, be present in it. And it was just fucking beautiful. The whole thing was fucking beautiful. The set and the production design just melded perfectly with the sort of theater, with the vibe of the theater, with the spirit of the structure. And it was like, I was like, this is almost too good for me, that we're going beyond what anyone is even going to read into a comedy show. So I've been working this set for a long time, and there's something that happens when you do a special where it's heightened. It's not a regular show. You know, I'm in a room. Steve Feinarts, my director, had, you know, put together like 9 cameras. I've got the audience of about 700 some odd people. And it's just heightened because everybody knows why we're there. And I've been running this set so much. And you get out there, and the sad thing about shooting these specials, it's almost an out-of-body experience, because you're thinking about so many things. I just wanted the sequence of the material to work, and I was doing 2 shows, and I wanted it to time out properly so we didn't have to cut too much. and I was given 70 minutes and I've been working on this thing, and whatever it is, a testament to whoever I am or how I work. You know, I was dealing with an hour and a half, hour and 45 minutes of material up until a couple of weeks ago. And we shot the first, I composed some rock music with some band that I put together with my help, with help from my friend Paige Stark. And we laid out this kind of rock riff to open the thing. I did that with the last special too. And then a longer version of it at the end. So we got the music, Kathy Ladman opened. We got the music going. The lights were going. Everybody was ready. I went out there. And all of a sudden, it's like I'm just locked into this mode. There's nothing comfortable about it, but it's not uncomfortable. You're just, there's an intensity to the focus of it. And I nailed it pretty good the first show. But of course, I wasn't happy. I stumbled on this word. I didn't do this thing right. This was that. But the bottom line is I came in at 70 minutes on the fucking dot, and that's crazy. There's so much stuff in this special. I couldn't believe it. I amazed myself. I've got this inner clock. But the show went good, and the audience was great. But second show, you know, I had my buddy Sam Lipsight in the dressing room. I had Brendan in the dressing room, Brendan McDonald. This woman, Katie, did a great job with hair and makeup. But, you know, I got notes. I got notes from Brendan. I got notes from Sam. I got notes from Steve, my director. And I made some trims. And the second show was kind of on fire. I kind of fucked up the sequence and I kind of dropped a joke out. And, you know, but, you know, it's a taping. But the sad thing is when I realized it and then I tried to do it again and I fucked it up again. You know, I had to not stop the show. The cameras were still running, but I had to tell the audience, like, all right, so we're going to go back and do that. You know, I kind of fucked this up. And then all of a sudden, it's not like the fourth wall is broken, but then, you know, something more relaxed happens. And it might have helped for the rest of the set on the second show. The second show is probably the one we're going to use for the most part because it was like kind of on fire. But I think a lot of it had to do with I kind of broke. You know, I broke out of the routine, which is something I do in my live shows all the time because it's all fluid. But when you're doing one of these specials, you want to hit all your bits and you don't want to fuck around too much. So when natural fucking around came because I fucked it up, you know, something was lifted and then I relocked in with a different energy. I got to remember if I ever do a special again or if I'm ever allowed to do one again or offered the opportunity to. I'm not the kind of guy that's going to put one up on YouTube. But I got to remember that, and I kind of do remember that. But there's a looseness that gets lost sometimes, but it sort of came back because of this little fuck-up I did, and it made me kind of go, all right. But I hit all the material I wanted to hit. Some of it's pretty challenging, and some of it's pretty interesting, and I just wanted to make sure that between the two shows, we could have stuff to work with, and I think we do. I think it went great. I want to thank all the people that came out to the Bam Harvey and saw the shows. I really appreciate it. After the second show, we had to redo the opening a bit. And then I ended up doing just a half hour, a little bit of material I didn't do, a little bit of Q&A. And then all of a sudden you realize, hey, buddy, you got union guys working. We're running out of time. And that's the weird come down. So I finish the show. I'm packing up my stuff. We got to get out of the theater. And I was maybe downstairs getting my shit together for a half hour, 40 minutes. My brother came with his partner and some of his stepkids. And, you know, there was people. But, you know, as I'm walking out through the top of the room, they'd already kind of like broke down the stage. And then this fucking sadness comes over you. You know, like, that was it. I hope we got it. You know, I worked on that thing for a year and a half or more. And that was it. That was what I was working towards. And now, like, the rug for the stage is already gone. The lights are already down. Everything's going away. There's a crew of people tearing it down. And then I'm just kind of like, did I do it? Was it good? And then I get back to the hotel, and it's just this horrendous, horrendous empty sadness that happens when you finish something like that. And all your whole life just comes screaming back at you. It's almost like you land back in your life with all the things that were causing you anxiety or problems or all the things you were kind of pushing aside. Or I'm talking about me, you know, leading up to this thing, at least the last week, just to keep the focus. And there's a sadness to it. I feel good about it. But, you know, just now I've got to retire this set. But again, great experience, great theater, great crew. great audiences. I appreciate all of you. You hear me? Do you hear me? All right. So, you know, strap in. This is a pretty beautiful conversation and interesting, but it kind of goes a place. And I don't think either of us were anticipating it. This is with Bridget Everett, who I mentioned earlier. All three seasons of Somebody Somewhere are streaming on Max. You can go to BridgetEverett.net to see where she'll be touring this summer. And this is me and Bridget meeting for the first time and talking.
Robinhood bietet Ihnen Zugang zum US-Aktienmarkt. Sie können Krypto zu niedrigen Kosten kaufen und verkaufen. Alles an einem Ort. Auf Robinhood. Investment- und Kryptowertedienstleistungen für EU-Kunden werden von der Robinhood Europe UAB angeboten, die von der Zentralbank Litauens als Finanzmakler und Kryptowertedienstleister zugelassen ist und deren Aufsicht unterliegt. Termingeschäfte auf US-Aktien und ETF-Token bergen ein erhebliches Risiko und sind nicht für alle Anleger geeignet. Bitte überlegen Sie sich sorgfältig, ob Investments in derartige Finanzinstrumente mit Blick auf Ihre Erfahrung, Risikotoleranz und Finanzlage für Sie geeignet sind. Beachten Sie die geltenden Beschränkungen und Zulassungsvoraussetzungen.
Kein Bock mehr auf Gelaber? Hier sind Marilena und Keno, die Hosts von Shift, Häfen, Logistik, Zukunft, ein Podcast von Bremenports.
In dem wir auch labern, aber mit Menschen, die in Sachen Klima und Transformation wirklich was bewegen wollen.
Die Hafen- und Logistikbranche ändert sich rasant. Moderne Antriebe, klimafreundliche Lieferketten, Berichtspflichten, immer mehr Erwartungen.
Aber grün ist das neue Normal.
Wir freuen uns, wenn ihr reinhört. Shift. Häfen, Logistik, Zukunft.
Ein Podcast von Bremenports und Bergholz Media.
I thought I smelled a dead rat. So I was just down in the basement with that panicky, like, there's something more frightening about finding a dead one.
Oh,
than,
yeah.
Than there is about finding a living one. It's just the worst.
Yeah.
It's horror. It's pure horror.
I'm not good with small little fuzzy things.
Yeah.
Things.
Well, I mean, well, you grew up in the Midwest. Didn't you have those mice and everything all over the place?
I mean, not really.
Really?
But I just got a house upstate in upstate New York.
Oh.
And I've had to learn about mice. And it's been a real, it's been a challenge.
Yeah. Well, I mean, the living ones are dead?
Both.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah.
So
I got a pool and there was one floating in it the other day. I was like, I'm not cut out for this.
Yeah, the floating mouse in the
yeah.
pool.
Yeah, and they're like, get ready for the frogs. I'm like, I can't. I just can't.
Yeah, frogs, toads. Yeah. They'll show up in the filters.
Oh, jeez. Do you have a pool here?
No. I had one when I was growing up.
Okay.
And there were frogs around.
Yeah.
And they'd kind of show up.
Yeah.
Sad business.
It is. Are we live? Is this live? Or are we just talking? We're just getting warmed up.
No, we're good. We're recording.
Okay.
So it's happening.
Okay.
You know, what will be used? I mean, I think this is pretty good stuff.
Oh, yeah.
We're doing it.
I mean, I can tell you about all the dead things I've been finding at the house.
No, really? What else?
No, it's mostly actually live things. Like, there's like possums. There's the bear on the block. There's
possums are kind of both like cute and horrifying at the same time.
Well, yeah, I have like there's two sort of feral cats. Actually, we're down to one right now. I know that there's another one. I'm praying he comes back.
Yeah,
but he's always got like you know the marks on the front, so he's a fighter.
Yeah.
But right now one of them, I call him Sweetie and Honey.
Yeah.
And right now Honey's on the loose. And
but they don't live in the house?
They don't live in the house. They came with the house when I bought the house.
They were around.
They're like, oh, by the way, there are these two cats. I'm like, how come they were never there when I I grew up with cats and
sure.
I love cats, but I can't let them.
Well, I mean, you don't
house.
Know what you're going to do with the ferals. You don't know how they're going to go.
I have a dog, you know. It's just,
yeah, but they're like, they're so tough. It's kind of crazy. In my old house.
Mm-hmm.
There was a black death cat, a feral, a wild as shit, couldn't hear anything.
Oh, yeah.
It lived for years.
Yeah.
And that's crazy. How the hell was he? Eventually, they got him.
But, you know, it's like, it's almost, oh, God, that's what I'm so afraid of. Because there's a pack of, what do you call them, a den, I guess, or is that what you call them? That live, there's all sorts of wildlife up there. And I have a little Pomeranian and... It's just,
oh no!
But I'm more worried about the cats because they're out there, just you know, sort of living. But it also makes me feel good that they're there, kind of protecting. But they do like to kill the mice and just sort of leave them.
Oh well, yeah. Well, that. But you know, they're wild animals, feral ones. It's not a lot you can do other than feed them.
Yeah.
And almost touch them.
Yeah. Well, they actually let me touch them, but then I leave food out for them, and like I have these cameras, of course, you know, because
you have cameras, yeah.
And that's when I found out I also have. a possum because he does a cleanup.
Kind of waddles
like,
around.
The one cat, like, sweetie, just takes what she wants. Yeah, yeah. You know, yeah. Things, it's like sort of just there.
Yeah, yeah.
And then the possum just comes up and like, fuck.
Yeah, the buffet.
Yeah.
Did you see the bear on the camera?
My neighbor sent me the bear's back because I'm new. So they, you know, they had the bear last year.
Were you just
year.
A little upstate somewhere?
A little upstate, yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, you know.
Close to the city?
90 minutes.
That's good.
Yeah.
Train? Car.
And car. I leased a car, you know. Yeah.
Why not? Live the life.
I know. But you know, then I bought this house and then I got no job. So, you know, we'll, but maybe today will lead to something spectacular.
Oh, this is going to be a big day.
This is I got a mortgage, Mark.
This is where it all turns around.
Yeah.
Bridget.
Okay, good.
It's so funny about your show, Somebody Somewhere. I didn't watch it forever.
Yeah. A lot of people didn't.
I know. Well, it's just the nature of finding things or what's going to connect to you, how it's going to connect to you. I don't know that I knew anything about it.
Yeah.
And then I wanted to talk to you, and I thought, like, well, you know, let's do it.
Good. I'm glad.
And I watched all three seasons.
Oh, you did?
Like, back to back. I couldn't stop watching it.
Really? That makes me very
crying.
Happy.
I'm just crying.
It's one of the, it's
a great show.
Thank you.
And now, like, I'm like, how is no one watching this? Like, I'm giving lip service. I'm telling people, like, you got to watch it. And they're like, really? What is it? I'm like, I don't know.
Well, but that's why nobody's watching it.
But it's a very touching, funny, great story with great characters. And so I'm doing what I can.
I appreciate
it. To spread the word.
Thank you.
But no more seasons?
That's it. But, you know, I'm not giving up on a movie or something, a Hail Mary down the road.
Oh, yeah?
You know, we have ideas. I have ideas. And I just feel like, you know, I feel like it was a real gift that we got to do it at all, honestly. You know, it's such a small show, small characters, blah, blah, blah. And
aren't they small characters? Some of them are big.
Well, yeah, that's true. Yeah. But small moments, maybe, you know, not really like no explosions. So
that's funny. That's how they should have sold it. Big characters, small moments.
Yeah. but, you know, that's sort of originally like we wanted people to discover it.
Yeah.
You know, and that is kind of the case. It is a real word of mouth situation.
Sure,
but
sure.
But, you know, it definitely has taken some time, for it to get around, but it's the best thing that's ever happened to me. It like changed my life, my outlook. It helped me with my grief, with finding a little more happiness.
Yeah,
so it's been really good for me. So I hope other people see a little of that and get something from it.
No,
I don't know.
It's completely uplifting and touching. And it's like the characters feel, you know, grounded and real. The writing's really kind of good. It doesn't, you know, you don't fall into any traps of like, you know, like, well, this couldn't happen or like you're not jumping any sharks or anything like that.
Yeah.
It's just a nice sort of arc to the whole thing. And the character changes kind of.
Slowly. Like.
But that, you know, that's important.
But that's also like, you know, when I watch TV and I see people like there's a lesson at the end of the episode and people grow and change. Like for me personally, like I'm a more inch by inch kind of person and really don't make, growth is very slow for me.
Well, but it's not like no one really changes, but like in the face of tragedy or grief that, you know, it's all consuming, you know, having been through it myself. And, you know, when you're in it at the beginning, there's no way to control it and there's no way out.
Yeah.
And then as time goes on, you know that what you're going to do is you're going to live with it, right? So in that grief, all these other parts of your being sort of come forward, you know, the hopelessness, the, like, what's the point, and all that other stuff that's always there but may not be fully part of you. But just the process of moving through grief is a dramatic change.
Yeah.
To get to a point where you're not free of it, but you can live with it.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah. And I think this show for me taught me how to, like, face it and be with it. And either was sort of a, you know, I know you've dealt with grief. It's everybody does.
It's the most common thing that people want to avoid.
Yeah. And in my universe, like it's just not my current circle of friends.
Sure.
They're more, you know, they're artists and they're, you know, we talk.
Right. Oh yeah.
But where I'm from, it wasn't like, how are you feeling? That's like just something that just wasn't.
Yeah. If you get that question, it's a one or two word answer and you move by.
Yeah, exactly.
Great. Good.
No, good. Yeah. Yeah. What's for dinner? You know, just all of that.
But you grew up in Kansas?
I grew up in Kansas. Yeah. I'm from Manhattan, Kansas.
The place that's in the show.
Yeah. The place that's in the show. We were going to try it in Emporia, Kansas, and then we visited Manhattan while we were scouting. This is where it should be because it's, you know, a military town and a college town, and it's where I'm from. And
you know it.
And I know it.
So there's a comfort level there.
There's a comfort level. And
so is it based on you? How did the show come into being? Like, I wasn't familiar. Like, I'm not a big cabaret guy. Surprising. I probably
get
could
in
be.
Line. Not a lot of people are. I mean, it's a niche
sure,
art form.
But I know about it, and I would probably enjoy it, but I tend to not really do a lot of things that I would enjoy. Like, I know they're out there, and I know when I've experienced them, I feel, you know, moved and emotional.
It's too much.
Yeah, you're just getting there. That's the problem with me. It's sort of like, all right, so how are we going to go to the place? And then is there parking? Or
All of it.
And then I leave early. We got to beat the crowd. So it's all about what happens on either side. But I didn't know your background. Yeah. But, yeah, let's talk about that. So you grew up in Manhattan, Kansas. Mm-hmm. What were you doing there? Regular stuff? Like, were your parents farmers?
No. My parents were divorced. My dad was a lawyer. My mom was a music teacher. I'm the youngest of six kids.
Yeah. Six?
Yeah, I was, you know, kind of...
Wow.
I had a lot of, you know, I sort of like to say that I was friends with everybody, but friends with no one. I was popular, but I kind of felt like a loner, if that makes any sense.
Yeah, I know exactly what it means. It's like there's the thing that you that engages with people, then there's the thing inside going like, nah, they don't like me.
Yeah, exactly. Which leads to, you know, I don't know. Strange kind of loneliness, yeah. And I feel like, I've always kind of felt lonely, I guess, but not when I sing.
Even with all those siblings?
You know, I was the youngest, and like, so that, you know, they picked on me. It's not like that now.
Like, by the time you were 10, one of them was gone already, or two, right?
Oh, yeah. Because my oldest sister was 14 years older than me. Yeah. So, you know, my brother, number five of six, is five years older. So, you know, I was an accident. Sort of. Try to keep the family together kind of thing. Didn't work out. So how's that for your self-worth? Well, you couldn't keep the family together.
Hail Mary baby.
Hail Mary baby. So I grew up there, and then I, you know, was in show choir and did all that. And I was a swimmer, and I went to school. I went to Arizona State on a...
But you knew early on that singing kind of got you out of yourself?
It was just the only thing that... That felt real. Mm. Do you know what I mean? Like, it was just like,
is real. I feel like I was terrified of it for my whole life. Yeah. You know, and I play guitar and stuff. And even when I watch people sing, when I sing, I feel like it's the most exposing, vulnerable thing I can do.
Yeah.
And I do not love the feeling. I've gotten better at it.
Yeah.
You know, but as a comic or somebody who lives on stage, to show that part of myself, it feels so fragile and weird, but that's not where my showman stuff comes. Like, I don't sing confidently.
Who cares? I mean, it's not about that for me. It's always about connection. You know, it's like singing and music to me are the best way to connect with other people.
Sure. Yeah.
It doesn't matter how great you are. You know, I mean, obviously I love to hear like incredible singers, but for me, I'd rather go see somebody that is—it's in their heart, you know. You can feel it.
It's so moving, man. If I go to a musical, and even watching your show, like when you finally get up on stage, I'm like, oh god, you know, I've just become this like crying man. I try to do it alone.
Are you a crier? Or are you?
I am, but I mean, not in situations that would warrant it. Like, I feel. If I'm in a situation with a human and, you know, that feeling comes up, I'll try to keep it down. But if I'm watching a show or a movie,
it's all out.
Yeah, it happens.
Do you put this roll of paper towels here in case I start crying? Is that?
Well, I usually have Kleenex out here. No, I think Tom Green was in here the other day and his dog threw up.
Oh, okay. Well, look, it works for all holes.
Exactly. Sure. So all your siblings just kind of beat up on you? Or you're just kind of the runt?
Yeah, like, you know,
hand-me-down clothes, the whole business?
Our family is like, the way you show affection is by making fun of each other. Yeah. And, you know, I didn't really get my skill set how to fight back until I got a microphone in New York City. You know, like, it wasn't like fighting back, but it was like a way of sort of having power or having control, you know, like,
or your space, like own your, you know, your space.
Yeah. And I do talk, like, in my live show, my cabaret stuff, I talk about my family a lot. And, you know, similar, I was listening to your, was it with David Harbour, you know, like the stuff before and everything, because I was really responding to what you're talking about before, about the long form and the TikTok. And it's something that really, like, eats at me, like, just like the way that everything is in small little bites now. And my cabaret show it's about the experience, the beginning to the end, and like, and to hopefully make people feel unlocked and joyful, but to connect with them, you know, and like, in my own personal way. So, and have an arc of emotion. Yeah. And that's really important to me.
Yeah. And they're just training people to, you know, they're breaking people's brains.
It does feel like that.
And they're breaking artist brains who feel like they have to sort of do that. I mean, it was so much better. Like, I'm glad everybody has the freedom to make their own stuff on their phone or on their camera. But sometimes the gatekeepers kind of made it better because, you know, it's like, we want to do a whole show. We're going to produce the whole, and people would go see it. And now, like, I don't know. I don't know what's happening. I know it's not good.
I know. I sound like one of those people. Like, now I'm just like, hey.
Yeah. I mean, how can you not if you came up in a different time?
Yeah.
But so when you're growing up, and you're singing in these different places, when do you realize, like, it's a thing you're going to do?
Well, I got a scholarship for, like, a choral scholarship, like vocal performance. So I went to the choir scholarship, but I got my degree in vocal performance, like opera singing.
Oh, really? So when you went to college?
Yeah, where'd you go? Arizona State.
Oh, in Tucson?
Tempe.
Yeah, Tempe.
Yeah.
Oh, that's right. Yeah, with the University of Arizona.
Uvea is in there. Yeah.
But, yeah, I've been to Tempe plenty.
There's a comedy club there.
Yeah, and I have a lot of history. I had an ex-wife from there. And my brother had a wife from there. And, it's a lot of Arizona in my past. Yeah.
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 Well, I loved it there. I haven't been back since I left, oddly enough. But I just, I knew I wanted to be a singer, but the only real singing I was doing there was like, I worked at the original P.F. Chang's, so
the first P.F. Chang's?
The first one, thank you very much. It's in Scottsdale, actually.
In Scottsdale?
The Fashion Square there.
Sure. So that was when it was like kind of this is a great new restaurant
here. It was hot. It was like Charles Barkley and all his friends, and he brought on all these people, and so I got to know a lot of professional athletes, and they would have me, they asked me to sing like the national anthem at some of the spring training games and like different, so that was the only singing I was doing.
And opera too?
I would sing, you know, class, you know, like in a classical style voice.
Sure. But did you ever do opera?
I mean, but like that's what I, you know, I did. You have to do your you know, concerts and all that shit, you know. But I would go wild on the weekends and go to karaoke bars, and that was my passion.
what were your songs?
You know, you ought to know, Piece of My Heart, the classics. But I mean,
I was always terrified of karaoke.
Oh, really?
Well, terrified.
People hate it, but
I know that, like, you know, people do it because it's fun, and they don't necessarily sing well.
Yeah.
But it's just fun to do, and everybody knows that's the score with karaoke. But in my brain, it's like, if I don't sing well, I'm going to walk off of that fun thing and just be like, oh, fuck. Why the fuck? I'm terrible.
All those people that are there to just like fucking, you know, vocally masturbate, nobody cares. Like,
I know that.
You love the guy or the woman that are just, they're going for it. And it gives me so much joy. I go with my friend, we used to go to this place called The Parlor every Sunday night when I moved to New York. And my friend Zach used to sing, you know, Creep by Radiohead. And just like every single time, it was like the first time he sang it, there was so much passion. And I just, I just love that. I love the way that music lights people up. It's, you know.
Yeah, it's great. But like, I remember there was one guy in our communities. I haven't seen him in years, but they would have parties or they have a thing at a karaoke bar with comics and stuff. Mm-hmm. And this guy could sing and he would just go like nail this fucking Zeppelin song or something. And I'd just be like, nah, fuck him.
Yeah, now, I feel that way too, you know. I mean, give me the show. Where's the show? I mean, I used to rip my shirt open. I was like, in it. I was passionate. Good. You know, I still do that, but you know.
So when you finished college, you went back home? Yeah. Well, you know, sometimes it works, right? Yeah.
You'd be surprised how many times it does work.
yeah, I'm sure.
After college, I moved. I used to do this. I worked at this resort in Maine called Quissasana. It was like sort of.
Bar Harbor?
No, it was. It's Lake Keysart, sort of inland,
yeah.
But it was a beautiful lake. And
Maine's pretty and weird.
So beautiful. And Stephen King lived on the lake, and it'd be like every summer you would hope to see either a moose or Stephen King. And it was just like so stupid. But
Meet him?
I did. I met him I didn't meet him. I saw him at like the little country store in the parking lot once.
Sure.
And
yeah, yeah.
He was polite.
Yeah,
you know?
Yeah.
I'm sure, you know, he moved to Maine for a reason. Like, get away from me, people.
Right.
But anyway, that was like sort of a Dirty Dancing style resort. And so you would sing in shows at night.
You were there as a singer.
It's like, you know, do shows, but it would have wait tables during the day.
Right.
Yeah. And then I moved to New York. I was like, fuck it.
But you never went back. Like, how did your family react to it?
To what? To singing and
To you pursuing that life.
I think they just thought that I was like, I don't think they thought too much of it. I thought that they just thought I was kind of like, you know, fumbling through life, and like, because I was a waitress for so many years. I think they just, you know, they didn't. I'd be like, oh, you know, when I started to do cabaret shows, when I started performing, they didn't know how exciting it was to like get up on a stage in front of real people that bought a ticket, and
did they ever come to New York?
No, I mean, later, like I don't think actually the only one that's seen me is my brother, Brock, who's been to see me in New York.
Yeah.
But, you know, at one point I finally made it into People magazine and they're like, okay.
Expectations are crazy.
Yeah.
You know, you could be working for 20 years doing just fine. And to your parents are like, you know, my dad used to say things like, you should talk to, Bill Maher. He seems to know what's going on.
Okay.
What the fuck is that? I'm 30 years in. Like there's some ticket.
Yeah.
You know, and now it's impossible because no one knows where to watch anything.
Yeah, it's true.
And you know, you're excited about a show and people are literally like, I've never heard of it. And you're like, what do you mean?
Yeah.
It's a big show. Well, where do you watch it? It's like, it's so annoying.
You know, Timu's not a show. That's like that where you buy clothes, isn't it?
I
don't know.
It sounds like it could be a network.
I can't remember all of them. But,
so when you went to New York, what were your expectations?
You know, I wanted to be on stage like a Broadway singer.
Okay, yeah.
And I got my Equity card right away doing some, you know, bus and truck thing. And I played the, you know, the Mother and Hansel Gretel traveling show. We were all on a bus and you would load the set out. You go to schools.
Oh, okay.
You put the set back in and you drive to the next place.
And that was an Equity gig?
It was an Equity gig.
So did you get representation?
No. I mean, I made like $180 a week or something.
What'd you get it through, a children's theater audition?
That's exactly. I went to the Actors Equity building. I stood in line. I auditioned and I got it. And that happened that was right away.
Was
when
it
I moved
like
to New
from
York.
From that paper? Where did you see the audition?
Yeah, what's the fucking
call?
Backstage.
Backstage, right?
Yeah, that's what it was.
Really?
Yeah. But then after that, crickets.
Crickets
for so long that I lost my Equity card because I never worked again.
And back to waitressing?
Back to waitressing.
In New York City?
Yeah. But
where at?
I worked at, the majority of the time I worked at this place called Ruby Foo's.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. I know Ruby Foo's.
Yeah. But there's a place, Rain, before that in Main Street. That was another restaurant.
Did P.F. Chang help you at Ruby Foo's?
It did. He saw that on my resume. He's like, he circled. I remember he's single. He's like, oh, P.F. Chang's. Okay. And because you had to be like, it was for this
Ruby Foo's was good.
It was good. It was fun. I opened it and I closed it. I was there for a very long time. Like I said, I waited tables for, 25, 30 years.
What year are we talking when you get to New York?
Like 97, something like that.
Oh, shit. I was still around.
Oh, were you?
Yeah. Like I went back, was I? Like I went back, yeah, I mean, 95, 97, when did I leave? I mean, I didn't really leave till 2001. Yeah, so I was, I'd moved to Queens. I was living in Astoria doing comedy. Yeah. Was there, so where, when you're working and you do the Hansel and Gretel show, then you, like, you didn't work for like a year?
I just didn't work at all. Like, I was just...
Were you miserable?
It was, yes, but not on Sunday nights when I would do karaoke. Like, that was my lifeline. Like, I know it sounds...
You had a place?
Yeah, we went to this place every Sunday night, the parlor, and I was really, like, it was it for me. But luckily, you know, and I was starting to go to see a lot of shows. My friend Zach that I mentioned before, he took me to... see Kiki and Herb, which is a very legendary duo in New York, and Murray Hill, who's on my show as Fred Rococo.
They're funny.
I met him, and he put me on his show. And
on a cabaret show.
On a cabaret show. You know, he used to do these shows like at Mo Pickens. Do you remember Mo Pickens? It was in the East Village. Maybe that was just after you left.
I kind of remember.
But so I started to get up and do like songs. I was doing these dumb original songs.
With what, piano accompaniment?
Yeah, with this guy, Kenny Mullman, and we sort of started...
Oh, so you were writing songs?
We were writing songs, but, you know, like, the first song, some of the first songs were like, At Least It's Pink, which is, you know...
Yeah.
And then Canhole, which is, I still love, it's about butt sex. It's so stupid. I mean, but it was fun. Like, it was just like, to me, like, some of these things were kind of bass, but they were also... It made me laugh, so I didn't care.
Well, what was the audience? Who was the audience?
You know, largely gay men and so queer people. And I was just thinking today, because I was on the plane, you know, flying here, and the crew happened to be, you know, a couple gay men. And I was like, man, I'm so happy. Like, they saved me. They changed my life. They gave me an audience. They gave me support. They made me feel like what I was doing was worth something, and it changed my life.
Well, they're a great audience.
Yeah,
you know, if they take you.
Yeah,
you know what I mean. Like, because there's certain, you know, there's certain comics. There's a certain type of female performer that resonates.
Yeah, I was trying to think of like what it is like that appealed for me specifically to, you know, to a gay audience or to a queer audience.
Yeah.
And I've never really been able to put my finger on it, but I think that there is something about being exactly who you are and not giving a shit. Like, do I feel that way in my day-to-day life? Probably not. But like on stage, I feel, you know, when I used to go to the grocery store with my mom, she would never wear a bra. She was just very sort of like, she had done like the socialite, you know, Manhattan, Kansas socialite thing. Yeah. But by the time I came around on the divorce and all the kids, she did not give a fuck. So she was walking around town. We called them her beaver tails with her fucking tits hanging out and just, you know, and she just didn't care. Yeah. And that really sort of shaped me as like, as far as like my body and how people accept me, like. And so for me, part of the stage stuff I was doing is really just kind of like, it was born out of her going to Food for Less with, you know, with her nightgown on, with no bra and slippers. I don't know.
No, that makes sense. There's a freedom in it, you know?
Also watching her progression from growing, being like a wound up sort of Midwestern school teacher, whatever, to just, you know, her favorite cuss word was motherfucker shit her ass, or by the time she just didn't give a fuck anymore, you know?
Was she angry?
Oh, always, till the day she died. But also very, very funny, you know, and probably kind of a narcissist, but I guess I like that. And
boozy?
She was a major drinker until she went to, you know, rehab. My brother and sister took her to rehab and she just cleaned, because she was ready. I mean, she was like... It was bad.
Yeah.
It was like lock all the doors.
Right.
And
oh, really?
Don't go to work. And that kind of vibe.
Yeah. Well, that's like, that's a heavy thing to grow up with,
I guess.
Yeah.
I mean, it is, but there were bigger problems, you know. Well, were there? I don't know.
Well, it just becomes, if it gets to the point, well, maybe you were older, but like when the erratic behavior starts, where you just didn't know what you were going to get, it kind of creates a sort of like pensiveness.
Yeah, that's true.
A slight fear of like, what's going to happen? And you kind of carry that with you.
Yeah, you just bottle everything up and until you can find a place to put it. And
yeah.
Some people put that and they work on themselves.
Sure.
Some people work on that with other people and connect to other people, and I just connect with strangers.
Yeah, no, me too. I can be more intimate and vulnerable with a room full of strangers than I can in my personal relationships.
Yeah.
It's a fucking nightmare in a way.
Yeah.
I mean, for some reason, I when I'm just with people that I'm building relationships with or whatever, that the vulnerability is too frightening somehow.
Yeah.
I'm going to be pummeled.
I agree. I mean, and there is a moment in my TV show, like where we put in the script, I was like, this feels too on the nose.
Oh, yeah.
You know, but Carolyn Strauss, who was our producer.
I know her. Yeah.
And
she's
kind
great.
Of godmother, you know, sort of like, she'd be like, you say that because that's what you mean. And like, it's just like, I just don't want you to leave me. And I feel like that is, you know, I could cry because that's the way I feel about everybody.
Yeah,
you know?
and sometimes, well, then, you know, the fear of leaving will stop you from engaging.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
Yeah, it's the fucking worst.
Yeah, I walk in a room sometimes with some of my closest friends and I feel like I'm back to one because I feel like I pull myself back constantly.
Yeah.
And they're not doing anything.
Yeah.
It's
yeah.
me.
Yeah. Yeah. You're projecting all kinds of shit.
Yeah.
Right? Yeah. 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 I've worn these people out.
Yeah. You know, whatever it is, I'm like, well, they love their partner more than they love me, or you know, not even that. It's just like I can be replaced or I can be forgotten about, you know, and it's so there's a lot of that
erased
in the show, which you know, I think you asked at some point, like, is, you know, is it based on me or whatever, but everything I do is really just born out of fear and how I'm trying to protect myself. And I think my live show, the cabaret stuff, is like, I mean, I sing songs like What I Gotta Do to Get That Dick in My Mouth, but I also always, when I'm with my band,
classic.
But I also always, like, there's a big chunk in the middle of my show about my family and my sister and my dad and all these things and my mom now, and because they're all gone, and like, I cry probably 75% of the time when I'm singing the song because I'm just like, you know, I allow myself, I give myself the permission to, because even though there's a room full of people there, it's like, I feel safer there, as you're mentioning before, like more.
Well, it's your space.
Yeah.
You know, you kind of own it.
And they're not going to leave because they just spent however much money to buy a fucking ticket. They're like, well, I'm in.
Yeah. You know? Like, it's interesting because I know in the show, you know, people who grow up with that, like, because I have it too, there's, I know I have this neediness that I've, you know, kind of boxed up.
Yeah.
And it lives in me.
Yeah.
Because I've learned from experience that, you know, I could be an exhausting friend. Because
okay, why? How? Like, what do you mean?
Well, just, I mean, like I was always the kind of guy that, like, you know, I'd get one friend and that relationship on my side was sort of like totally engaged. Mm-hmm. But I just needed that one guy.
Mm-hmm.
And if that started to wobble, I'd be like, what the fuck is happening?
Yeah.
What am I doing? Like, I remember that. But at some point, I killed that part of me.
Yeah, good. All right. Sorry, I'm just giving myself a little lit screen. It's a tick.
Yeah,
sorry.
Yeah.
So now do you parse it out a little bit more?
I think over, as I get older, you know, I have friends for many years now, but it's still, I used to do a joke about it. I used to do like, you know, I don't know how, when people say they have a lot of friends, I'm like, no, you don't. And I say, you know, you only need two friends. You need the main guy and the guy you go to when you drain the main guy. You're like, hey, man, can I talk to you? He's like, well, I'm kind of busy right now. That's all right, I'll call the other guy. You take a break. Yeah, that kind of thing.
Well, see, I feel like I need to keep a little bit of a deeper roster in case, you know, one leaves me, like I think that they all will.
So you're carrying a few?
I'm carrying a few.
Yeah.
But also, like,
long phone list.
They put in the work. Like, I, you know, when I grew up in Kansas, like I said, and whatever, you know, my mom used to say, you know, she said a lot of things, but one was like, you can't trust anybody but yourself. And I guess that does sort of stick with you if you hear it enough times.
Yeah.
And so, But my friends in New York really have, you know, they're all therapized and, you know, they.
And that was not something you grew up with?
No, I've never been to therapy except for when I was
in.
To
this day?
Well, I went in grade school, like when they made us, like they had us like when we were all fighting too much, and which is probably my fault, you know, because I was from a, you know, a chaotic household and I was probably lashing out too much. And so we all had to go see a child psychologist, but not in my adult life.
Really?
Yeah. I should.
Yeah. I've gone sporadically, you know, sometimes for long periods of time. But as you get older, you're like, that was another bit I did. When you go to a therapist as an older person, you kind of know yourself, you know, why you're going.
Mm-hmm.
So it's sort of like, look, I know there's some things we're not going to be able to unfuck. I'm having these.
Yeah.
I'm having these specific things.
Yeah.
So maybe give me some perspective on that.
Yeah.
Yeah. And sometimes it helps. I just started again, actually.
Well, I sort of liked, you know, what David was saying about, you know, the sort of the old school style where you go and you don't really look at them.
Oh, yeah.
And you lay on the thing and you sort of never see them.
Yeah, he's doing real old school. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, I think that could work. But there's something about me, too, that's also afraid of, because I feel like, you know, I have so many emotional tripwires, which is sort of helpful in, you know, when writing and creating and singing and all that.
Yeah.
Like, it helps me feel like very, they're just all right there. They're sort of just so, they're so, I can grab them, you know? I'm afraid, like, if I get fixed, does that mean I'm not going to be able to, like...
Oh, you're never going to get that fixed.
That's true. I mean, there's a lot that needs to be addressed.
Those wired-in resources are always going to be there.
Yeah.
You just might have a little more control over them.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm talking about that right now in my act about, like, how... Because I'm trying a very specific medication.
Mm-hmm.
And there's the fear. Like, does all my creativity come from that place? Like, and then I say, am I just mining for gold in a river of panic?
Yeah. You like that one.
I do. Yeah. it's not a big laugh line, but it's an interesting image.
No, I love it. And also, you know, one of my favorite things is that my friend Larry does this, and my friend Zach, like when they make themselves laugh, I'm so delighted by people that can recognize their own when they've said something cute.
Yeah, Well, sometimes it's sort of you're trying to prompt it.
Yeah. Let them know.
Yeah.
No, you're meant to laugh at this. Yeah.
That's the funny part. You on board? Yeah, it's a trick, and I don't really like when I do it on stage, you know. Because, you know, you do the same, like you do the act over and over again, and then you find yourself laughing in the right place. Like, okay, so you're uncomfortable there. Just let them have it. You don't have to shield yourself.
I was like, there was like one like thing in my show. I can't remember what it was, like my live thing. And I was just like, and then I started just put it in. Like, I just started like would make myself laugh there. I was like, stop. I don't like anything that feels false. So I just got rid of it. But
I put things in my show that never get laughs, but but I like them.
Yeah. There's one thing I keep that I can't get rid of. I'm like, that one's for me. I say that after that one's for me.
Yeah, take it. It's yours. So, but when you start, what's the evolution? I don't know the cabaret scene. Were there comics around that I might know in the cabaret scene? Stand-ups ever?
Well, like somebody who's killing it right now is Cola Scola. Do you know Cola Scola?
No.
Well, you gotta see, it's O'Mary on Broadway. They just got nominated for a bunch of Tonys today.
Yeah.
I'm trying to think of who else you might know in that world. But
did Schumer, like, did you know Amy Schumer?
I met Amy, so I went to the, I went to Just for Laughs.
Oh, okay. With your show.
With my show.
Yeah. When was that?
I can't really remember, honestly. Like,
well, that's interesting. So you got into the festival.
Yeah, like 2011, maybe.
Oh, wow. Okay.
Give or take.
Yeah,
you know?
Yeah.
Actually, you were there, I remember, because I was talking to somebody and you were coming off the, you know, the Hyatt, you were coming off the elevator.
Yeah.
And I remember seeing you. But anyway, that's sort of where Amy and I connected.
Okay.
She had seen me perform at this small theater in New York called Ars Nova.
I know that place, yeah.
And we just hit it off. We both like Chardonnay. We both have sort of a filthy sense of humor. And she took me on the road with her.
Really? So you did songs?
Yeah,
that's great.
I used to open for her, and then I started closing for her because it is hard to follow a singer, you know, and like, and I like do the airplane at the end, and, you know, I go out and I'm in the audience, sing-alongs and all this shit. But she's been really great to me, for me. You know, she's really helped me along the way. She's very generous.
Yeah.
And paid me so I could
keep going.
Keep going and quit waiting tables.
Yeah, well, that's,
you know,
great.
She would. She'd be super. Super generous.
Because there are so many scenes in New York.
Yeah, my scene is more like performance art, cabaret. But, you know, I started a band in around, we're just celebrating our 15 years together. And I don't know if, you know, how much you know about my situation, but one of the founding members of my band, The Tender Moments, was King Adraka, Adam Horovitz from the Beastie Boys.
Yeah,
so
he
played the bass, and he was somebody else who was very helpful to me. Like, I like was writing these songs, or, you know, one of my more well-known cabaret songs is called Titties, and I told him about it, and I was like, this is dumb. He's like, nah, sounds like a hit, you know. And but he validated me, you know. And and then he helped. They had their studio. The Beastie Boys had oscilloscope, and so he
in New York.
Yeah. So he's like, you have to write songs so you can do an album. We recorded it there, so I had, you know, my first album.
He produced it.
He produced it.
Oh wow.
So
when was that?
Oh, that's been years ago.
Yeah, yeah.
But I'm still singing those same tired songs, but people like them. Anyway, so the kind of people that have helped me out along the way have been, you know, a variety of different, you know, than my friend Scott Whitman, who's from the Broadway world, he's helped me. And, as far as like stand-ups, like I knew a lot of them, but it wasn't really my world. And so going to Just for Laughs to me was like so much anxiety. Like I just, like I was up in my room hiding, and Amy's like, come down, because you know, they have those huge parties and everybody's there.
The
and
height,
I was like, I'm like, I would rather jump out the window. I do not want to fucking go talk to a bunch of comics and business, you know, and biz types or whatever. But she encouraged me to do it. And
I always thought that like it was that they are sort of compatible. I mean, like so many cabaret acts are hilarious. I mean, there is like comedy all the way through it, usually.
Yeah. I mean, I think my show is meant to be funny. Like, I think of myself as a singer first, but I want people to laugh and let go.
So, but like when you're doing like these karaoke nights and then you're doing bits on other people's shows, how do you put together a whole cabaret show? When does that happen?
So my friend Jason Egan, who was he's an artistic director at, he's just now leaving Ars Nova after many years. So it's a theater for emerging artists. And he saw me sing karaoke and he's like, I think you should do a show. And I was like, what are you talking about? I just did a show. You saw me.
Yeah,
I was on top of the bar. That was so good. But he encouraged me to like put together like a structured show there at Ars Nova. And I did. And so he is kind of the first person that like saw something beyond like just getting up and singing a song in somebody's show, but really thought that I could do something. And that night, John Steingart, who he and his wife own Ars Nova, he's like, we have to, this is something, and we should do something with her. So he came to L.A. and knew met Michael Patrick King from Sex and the City and The Comeback and everything. And he's like, I have somebody I think you should see. And she's raw, but there's something there.
Yeah.
And so Kenny and Michael and I all did this show called At Least It's Pink. And it just, I've slowly just, every night I was just out fucking doing something.
Like, yeah.
Because I loved it. I would wait tables and then I would go sing on somebody's show. You know how it is. You take whatever you can.
The gigs, yeah.
The gigs.
Yeah.
And then it just kept going.
And you have a composer that you work with?
Well, now I've written songs with all different kinds of people. I've written with Adam. I've written with, I wrote with Kenny at the time. I wrote with Scott Whitman and Mark Shaman. I've written with a lot of songs with my band, Matt Bray, Mike Jackson, Cara Machiavelli, and Danton Bowler. Like, I've always written.
When you do the band, is that like just, is it just an extension of the cabaret where you're doing stuff in between?
Well, yeah, like it's kind of a rock show with talking in between.
Yeah, yeah.
And so my mainstay is Joe's Pub in New York.
Yeah.
But I'm going to be in LA this summer. I'm playing the Wiltern, which will be exciting. I've played, you know, Largo and El Rey here with the band. But this will be the first time we're going on a little mini tour. But it's like, it's a ride, you know.
What's the name of the band?
The Tender Moments.
Yeah. Big following?
Yeah, I mean, you know, yeah, sure. I mean, we played the Beacon last year, so I guess
that's good.
That's, you know, we're
couple
not
a thousand, yeah.
We're not at Madison Square Garden, but I think we're doing good.
And no, whenever
I sell, people really like to see me at Joe's. And
you were at Joe's a long time, right?
I've been there a long time, and people, that's kind of like a thing. People really want to see me there, but I wanted to try something else, so I did the Beacon.
Yeah,
but
big,
you know.
Yeah, that's a big change. What's Joe's seat? A couple hundred. Yeah, Beacon's like 2,200.
It's almost three, like it's bigger.
Yeah, and 26.
But I was like, fuck it. Yeah. And it was great.
Well, you're a big act.
You know, big enough. I don't know.
Yeah. It's just a matter of whether you can fill the space.
Yeah, it is.
You know? And you feel it, you know?
Yeah, and I wasn't sure. But
yeah, but you did it.
Yeah.
So, but in all this, that's a whole life that you're living. So how does the show happen?
So I was at Largo with my band, and HBO came, and ultimately they gave me a holding deal.
Right. But Caroline wasn't there still, was she?
No, but she's independent. Like she was like sort of an independent producer or whatever.
Because
so.
She was ahead of HBO years ago.
Yeah.
Like I've known her for my whole life.
Yeah.
It feels like.
So first thing I did was with Carolyn and Michael, Patrick King and I we had this, and we did it with Bobcat Goldthwait.
Goldthwait, yeah.
We did a pilot for Amazon that didn't end up going.
Bobby directed?
Yeah, him and Michael together.
Yeah.
And that didn't get picked up.
Was it the same story?
No, this is different.
What was that one?
I worked in a home with like Down syndrome kids, and Lonnie Anderson was my roommate. And it sounds wild, but it was actually really sweet.
Yeah.
I love Lonnie Anderson. I think like I just,
yeah.
You know, you remember Lonnie Anderson?
Of course. Yeah.
I love her. I was just on eBay looking for a autographed picture of her today.
Did she pass away?
No. She's around. She's.
You could probably ask her for an autographed picture.
I know. I guess I could. I have her number. yeah. But she's so great, and she's still like she's a fox.
Yeah.
So that didn't go, but I got this holding deal. So I called up Carolyn, and I was like, I got this deal.
Yeah.
Would you want to do something?
Yeah.
Like not really realizing I was asking. She's pretty legendary.
Totally.
she's like if you want me, I'm in. And then like we connected with Paul Thurene and Hannah Boss, who are from kind of the same scene as me, Ars Nova world. And,
right.
And they pitched the idea for the show. They dreamt up a world. And then we all just sort of, I'd say the four of us are kind of the creative center of the show. And
so you did like, you had a deal. So you were working with these showrunners like Michael, right?
That was
the first one.
That was the first one. And so the second one was Carolyn and then Paul Thurene and Hannah Boss.
So they were the writers.
They were the writers. So they came up with the idea of somebody somewhere.
But you were telling them your life.
Well, I think they knew a lot about my life because they'd seen my shows and they knew my deal and all that. And so they knew I had a dead sister, check. They knew that I loved singing, check. And then they wrote a part for Murray Hill as Fred Rococo, who had been a longtime friend of mine. And I heard those three elements and I was like, you know, shit, this is...
It's great.
Yeah.
So when you cast it, because I don't know Jeff Hiller, but I know he does some pretty wild stuff.
He's great.
Yeah. In terms of like I think my girlfriend knows him from horror stuff.
Yeah. Yeah, that's like a very different Jeff.
No, I know. But like, you know, that sort of, it seems to me that, you know, that relationship that you guys have in the show is so sweet, but it's also, you know, he's not going to let you push him away.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Which is
kind of like what we were talking about before.
Yeah. There's like, to me, like he's sort of an amalgamation or whatever the right word is of my friend Zach that I was talking about and some of my other friends that like really, even if I would fuck up and I was like, well, that's it.
Yeah.
They'd be like, no, I'm mad and I'm really fucking pissed at you right now, but this is not it. You know, we're in this. I'm like, what do you mean?
You let me go.
So let me go. Let me do this again to myself.
Let me fuck it up.
Yeah, let me fuck it up.
Yeah.
Fuck.
Yeah.
But the thing about Jeff when he auditioned was that he there's something so sweet and undeniable about him. So
were you part of casting?
Oh yeah.
Oh yeah.
I was the one that suggested Jeff because I'd known him from around the scene. He was like in the upright, you know.
Citizens Brigade?
Yeah. So he was sort of like in that world.
Right.
So kind of we're just like our circles were sort of crossing and he was a guest on the show I used to do at Joe's called Our Hit Parade. But anyway, he auditioned and he was incredible. And I feel, you know, he's definitely like the sort of special sauce. Like he is such a big part of the foundation of why the show is successful.
Yeah.
He's funny and sweet and complex. And
yeah, he's great. You guys are great together. But like, where did you get the, did you feel, were you nervous about the acting?
Yes. Very nervous.
Yeah.
Yeah. Like, not his, but mine. Like I was, because I'm not a trained actor. I mean, I'd done some stuff. I did this, I did the Sex and the City movie. I did like small things. I did this movie called Patty Cakes, which really helped me. It was like a Sundance kind of situation. And the director, Jeremy Jasper, was like, he saw me on Amy's show, you know, Inside Amy Schumer. I used to close the season with a song.
Yeah.
And I think he saw me singing What I Gotta Do to Get That Dick in My Mouth. And he's like, she should play the mother in my movie.
Yeah.
And I did. But
a no-brainer.
Yeah. But he had a lot of patience with me and Danielle McDonald, who played Patty Cakes. Like, they were very gentle with me and sort of helped me. Because I just am constantly racked with fear and self-doubt. Like, I just can't, like, the reason I like to do my live show is because I'm in control and, like, I don't have to worry about anybody being like, well, you're not doing it right. Because if I hear I'm not doing it right, then I'm like, ooh. But,
did you get a coach or anything?
No, I just was like.
Figure it out?
I'll just figure it out. And then, like, I knew Paul and Hannah and Carol and everybody created such a. And Jay Duplass directed our pilot. Everybody created such a warm environment. It was like you couldn't fuck up because you felt so cared for.
Yeah.
And we just took our time, even though we shoot like, you know, 1,000 scenes a day. But I don't know. Like, how did you feel about acting at first?
I knew.
You're like, I knew I had it.
No, I don't know that I have it, but I do, I can do it.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? But I don't feel like I have a lot of range necessarily in terms of character, but I know that I can listen and I know I can be present and I know that I can emotionally engage.
Yeah, that's it.
With a scene.
Yeah.
But I knew also when I did my show on IFC that just from seeing other comics, I knew that there was going to be a learning curve and I would probably suck for about a season or two.
Yeah.
And I, just because I don't know how to be in my body that way.
Yeah.
And I did, I thought, but it was fine. It was on IFC and I knew it going in. It was one of the first times I was like, dude, you don't know how to do this.
Yeah.
So, and the stakes aren't that high. So just figure it out.
Yeah.
And I think I figured out something, you know, and I feel better about it. But when you do some version of yourself, which I think everyone does.
Everyone mostly does, unless you're like, you know.
But then, like, in terms of getting jobs, I'm sort of like, is this, am I being creative? Is it worth all the time I'm spending in the trailer? Is it satisfying?
Yeah.
You know, it's hard for me to judge, you know, but when you're like you and like I in my show as well. And I just recently did a little film where I'm the lead. If you're that busy, it's great.
Yeah.
But if you have time to sit in the trailer and be like, what the fuck are they doing?
Yeah, exactly. Just like, I've been here since six.
Yeah.
What do you mean you're having lunch?
What could be going on?
Yeah.
You know, I'm looking for challenging things that will make me feel like I'm making very distinct choices and I'm sort of like, well, that's not really me. And, and I've done some, you know, I think I did okay on Glow.
I think you did great.
Well, thanks. But I'm more confident now because I give less of a fuck, I think.
Yeah, that helps.
Yeah, I think in terms of everything, because you get to a certain age where you're like, what the fuck difference? You know, you did it, you know.
Yeah.
But I can't. I still can't watch myself.
I don't like it either. But there's something about doing the, because we edited everything.
Yeah.
And so there was that forced me to kind of get over a lot of stuff.
Yeah. Yeah. You know? Yeah. Because you're in the room.
Yeah. And the thing with like the acting was like first season, like I had some good moments. I had some bumpy moments. But I think by season two and season three, I felt really comfortable.
Well, that's interesting because I didn't notice any. So, what we notice from being in it and then watching it, and you're like, I could have, why didn't they go with the other?
Well, honestly, I thought, especially in the last season, I was so in love with everybody on the show. And I, like there were scenes I was doing with Mary Catherine, who played my sister Trisha.
She's so fucking good.
You know, we used to be roommates. We were in New York. We lived together, and she was like on Broadway. She was killing it.
She's so funny.
But she's always been one of my favorite actors. But she, I would just like sometimes be watching her in the scene. I'm like, wait, I'm the other part of this. I gotta just stop like fangirling over here.
Oh, that happens to me all the time. It's fucking nuts. Yeah, because who am I? Like, in this movie, I did a scene with Sharon Stone. And I was like, what the fuck is happening?
Why? Like, how am I here?
Yeah, and I really couldn't. Like, we did two takes.
Yeah.
For a master, and I went back to my trailer, and I was like, get me out of this. I can't. What am I doing? I'm not an actor. It's Sharon Stone in there, and she's all in.
Yeah.
And it was just one of those weird moments where I'm like, dude, you better pull it together.
Yeah.
You know, look at the little, you know, points that, you know, you learn from Al Pacino. You know, why are you there? What are you doing? Go to the character.
Yeah.
And fucking...
And that you're there for a reason. You know, you have to remember that. That's the hardest thing to remember sometimes, that they want you there.
Yeah, I don't believe that.
I don't either.
It's like, who turned this down?
I know.
Why? I don't even have that many Instagram followers. What do you think you're going to get out of me on the promotional side?
I know. Oh, my God. That's so true.
It's so fucked up.
God, that hurts.
Yeah. But you are undeniably a thing. You know, so you have your own thing. Like, I know I do too. Mm-hmm. But sometimes I think the thing that they think I am is limited. You know, like, you know, I'm not just some cranky fuck. You know, I'm sensitive. I run deep, man. Let's get to the deep part.
See, there's your next show.
Oh, I know.
Mark Maron, I'm deep.
Yeah, I'm always doing some version of that. I think this special is going to be called Panicked.
Oh my God! I just got myself some not propofol. What's it called?
Propofol, the beta blocker.
Is that what it's called?
Yeah, the beta blocker.
Yeah, I just got that, and I'm afraid to take it because it
doesn't last long.
I'm afraid it'll like take the thing off of me. But
why'd you get it?
Because I guess like when it's outside of somebody somewhere, like I did something last summer, and I was so like I already had food poisoning, so I was having a lot of issues.
And
I just could not get out of my head. I was like, but I was afraid to take it because I didn't want to not be, it was an emotional scene. So I had to be emo. And
Right.
So I just went there and I sucked really bad the first couple times. And the director came in and you could see that he was like, we've made a mistake. I mean, I know that look because I've had it on my face before. What were we thinking? But
was it though?
But I got there, but I'm just like, that's part of my process to really fuck it up a couple times.
That's part of my life. I've gotten better at it. But now, like, what I do when I'm nervous or, like, I have to travel and I got to do this special next Saturday is that, like, you know, God damn it, I hope I don't get a cold sore. I hope I don't get sick.
Oh, yeah.
Is my hair okay? I mean, what the fuck is happening? Why did I choose this shirt? Like, anything to undermine myself. And it's like, I can't fucking figure out why is that happening?
At this stage.
Like, you know, and I have to shut it off. That's why I got on this medicine I got on.
Yeah. I just had this similar thing. Like I did a run of shows earlier this month.
Yeah.
And I like went to the sound check and like my top note just like was not there. And from there, I just fucking spiraled.
Broke it all down?
I've never had this happen before. Like, I was like, should I cancel the show? I can't cancel because I know people.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, they're making an effort to be here and everything.
Did you get all the way to, was I ever good at this?
No, but I was having such bad anxiety that it felt like that there was a foot on top of my soft palate and the roof of my mouth, like, pushing out. So I had to go to this ear, nose, and throat doctor, and he gave me a Xanax because, like, I've never experienced this before. And I was like, what the fuck?
Yeah.
Because it's like, and I'm like, why is this happening after all these years?
Yeah.
Like, I have sung in my underwear in front of Gloria Steinem. Like, what the fuck is my problem?
Yeah, you know what I mean? Yeah.
But it wasn't the thing, my whatever was just off. So now I'm like, is this what it's going to be like from now on? But, like, I just went to another doctor who, because since then or after that I had like this incredible like neck and jaw tension.
Yeah.
So he ended up shooting lidocaine in my jaw and neck. And I feel much better now. And I think it was just an episode, but like I cannot live that way. Like I can't.
Yeah. And Xanax worked?
It did help me, but I'm not a pill popper. So
that's a relaxing one. The beta blockers, it's hard to feel what they even do. Like I was prescribed them once because I was in a very kind of high drama, codependent relationship, and I didn't want to get angry.
Okay.
So someone gave me beta blockers. I don't know if it did, but knowing I was taking them sort of helped. Yeah. Like, because she would do things to just make me mad to get the drama going.
Yeah.
And I'm like, and I'm going to Al-Anon and shit. And I'm like, I got to detach, dude. You just got to fucking, you know, this is not your problem.
Yeah.
And then, like, you know, I needed the beta blockers to, you know, enforce my Al-Anon.
Whatever it takes.
Well, it took getting out of the relationship.
that'll do it. We all find our way eventually.
Yeah. But the stuff, well, that was another reason the show is so good is because there are very, you know, strangely real moments that are very, not base, but the vulnerability of just, you know, bodily functions and that kind of stuff. There's something about the scene where your sister's on the toilet and it burns when she pees that I don't know who wrote that line, but that line of sort of like, well, sometimes it burns a little bit. Your line, it happens.
I can't remember if that was written or improv. But
it's such it's a strange thing to, like, as a sexually active person, that to have gone through that moment of sort of like, oh, I don't know. Well, maybe it's all right. I'll wait a couple of days. And in the end, it's fine.
Yeah.
But to me, it was such a profoundly real moment. And then when you go look at it, it's just too funny.
Well, I think, like, you know, the point of that was obviously to show their growth, you know.
Sure.
But that's also, like, sisters, like, I remember when I was little, my one sister's like, all right, get over here, I'm gonna show you how to put a tampon in. I'm like, I'm 8.
Yeah. You know, like,
so just on the toilet, and I'm like, okay, now, you know, just like,
I got it.
Okay. I will not forget this. Thank you.
Well, I guess that's the benefit and the downside of having so many older siblings.
Yeah, exactly.
So your sister passed away, though. How long has that been?
2008.
Oh, yeah. A while, huh?
So my dad was 2006. She was 2007. And then my mom died, like, I think 3 years ago now. On Monday, it'll be 3 years, I think.
Wow.
Yeah.
That's a lot.
Yeah.
I guess it happens. And was it similar to the story in the show that your sister got cancer?
My sister did get cancer, but her story was different. It was really, she did get cancer. And at that time, I was waiting tables. I had, like, no money.
Yeah.
And, like, you know, there was, like, this thing, like, you know, I should go
back
see her. She was in California at that point, and I didn't have the money. I didn't get there in time, and, like, have my last conversation with her haunted me for years, and you know, like, they're just like wailing, why me, and just, you know, she was a sweet one. Like, you know, my brothers and sisters, like, my oldest sister Britton was very sweet and really always looked out for me and believed in me. You know, she was. In season one, there's a thing, like, where I bring, like, my tape to her graveside, you know, because and part of that was born out of, like, she always wanted to hear what I was doing. And I was singing these songs like fucking Canhole and At Least It's Pink. And I was she's going to think these are stupid. She wouldn't have. But I was too embarrassed to share it with her. And I never did.
Yeah.
And then, you know, she was very supportive. And so was my mom. But, like, I early on. And so it was just. There was a lot of, like, my shame about how I handled the end of her life that's in the show. There's a lot of grief. There's a lot of me.
Right.
And a lot of sort of I loved her, and I did not do right by her at the end of her life. Mm. And so to me, this is kind of a way of honoring her. That sounds like such a shitty thing to do, like, after somebody's gone. But I think about her all the time. Yeah. I talk to her all the time, even though it's been this many years.
Yeah.
And, you know, it's my mom and I were very close. And when she died, it was really hard. My dad, you know, when we weren't close, and that's hard for its own.
Sure.
But, you know, there is something about her who was, like, kind of sweet and, like.
And too young, probably.
50 when she died. And, like, and to me, like, she had, like, this really vulnerable, helpless. She was so funny, but, like, like she was kind of like the an easy target kind of thing. Yeah. And a lot of bad things happened to her. And I when I sing about her now, I still cry because it's so much.
Were you able to, like in doing the show, were you able to process it differently?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Absolutely. I had a lot of loss during the show and a lot of loss leading up to the show because, you know, we had each season, first season, my dog died in the middle, of the middle shooting.
Yeah.
And Poppy was like, if she was the love of my life, like literally the love of my life.
Yeah.
And then season two, right before we shot it, Mike Haggerty, who played my dad, he died.
Yeah.
That was very difficult because we had a very special connection. And then my mom died before season three. And so it's like when you're doing a show that's sort of about dealing with grief, but you're going through it yourself, it was really overwhelming. And I felt like everything that I was also putting of myself in the show, about the way I feel about myself and self-worth and love and how I have a hard time connecting to other people and all those things. It was just so much.
Yeah. And that was all going on.
It was all happening. But once we finished, I have I somehow have a sense of peace about that I acknowledge some of my grief finally.
Yeah.
And I'm able to kind of not just beat up on myself for about not maybe having the right kind of relationship with my dad or failing my sister. Like, I just feel like I don't know. There's something about finally facing it. And, you know, like you said, you know, I don't know. When you're not somebody that doesn't, if you don't go to therapy, get yourself a show, 'cause that'll help you. I don't know.
Sure. Well, I mean, there's definitely that thought that, you know, you did get through it, and it did bring it back to the surface in a way that was contained in somewhat. You had to show up to do the work.
Yeah.
But those emotions were able to work within what you were doing.
Yeah.
And so on some level, to be able to sit with grief in a way that's supported.
Yeah.
Is a big deal.
It's a huge deal. And I think...
And be seen, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I feel really lucky to have worked with the people that I did who really cared, you know, cared about me, cared for me, cared about the show.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah.
I don't know.
It's great. It's like, you know, because I talked about that in my last special, that because it's uncontrollable when you get into the zone of it. Mm-hmm. But there were two things that kind of were in my mind, which was like, this isn't unusual. Mm-hmm. It happens to everybody.
Yeah.
This is part of life.
Yeah.
But there is a sense that, you can't, you know, you want to keep it to yourself somehow.
Yes.
Yeah. And, but it's uncontrollable.
Yeah.
So you have that moment where you realize people are built to deal with this.
Yeah.
You know, this is part of the human experience. And once you cross that threshold to have those feelings in a public way, you know, it's a big relief.
It is a relief. But I feel like after anytime somebody, when my mom died, my friend's I'm coming over. I was like, don't come over. I couldn't even bear to see somebody. I couldn't bear it. Like this, when my dog Poppy died, Carolyn's like, do you want people to say something to you, or do you want everybody to, you know, because I put her down on Sunday and I was back at work Monday, 6 a.m.,
So
the word went out and nobody said anything to me. But, I can't face people when I've hurt that much.
Yeah.
And the show has kind of helped me, you know, the stuff I did with Jeff, it's like some of the scenes when you've, it's always going to be better when you let somebody catch you. But for me, that is so hard.
I know.
It's so hard to let somebody catch me, because it's, and there's, why do you feel any shame around grief? Like, why do I feel that way sometimes? Or why?
Because it's a vulnerability you can't control.
Yeah. Yeah.
Like usually, you know, even when you're singing, you know, the emotional depth you have control over.
Yeah.
But grief, it's just
it's just there.
You're not, you can't stop it.
You can't stop it.
And so that feeling of not having control of these emotions, it's hard, but once it's out, and you see
yeah.
it's okay. It's like a fucking gift.
It is a gift. And there's something that's so wonderful, like, about connecting with people who have your same specific kind of grief.
Yeah.
Like that, or maybe, you know, like, I felt that I just was so grateful to have people to talk to that were like, I've lost my sister too, or yeah, I've lost my, you know, or
of
like,
course.
You know, my friend said to me, this is something after my mom died that I thought was so, and it was something I'd never said out loud, but it's because I felt embarrassed about it.
Yeah.
But he was like, nobody's ever going to look at me the way my mom, the my mother yeah. looked at me. Cause she, I was her, you know, I was yeah. her favorite. She loved me. And I was like, that's it. Like, that's the thing for like, when I can't even, like, nobody's going to look at me. Like my mom looked at me cause I was so special to her. And like, yeah. and you think about going through life, I'm in it for the rest of my life. There's nobody that feel, you know, that, yeah. that has, and like, that is, you grieve your mother and you grieve the loss of that. And, yeah. And that feels like kind of like I had a lot of shame about that. But
what's interesting though, I don't know if you found this though, is that you can get there. You can still be seen by your mother.
Yeah.
And you know, it's emotional.
Yeah. What,
like when I did that scene with Sharon Stone, mm-hmm. you know, Lynn, who was my girlfriend yeah. and she was a director and she was always very supportive of my acting, really was like, you got to do. Mm-hmm. And to get to a place of emotion that I needed for the scene, mm-hmm. like I knew I wanted to sort of tap into that, but I didn't know how. You can't just like walk into like someone passing. Mm-hmm. But I walked into, you know, how much she believed in me.
Yeah.
And that's always there for you.
Yeah.
Like whatever that dynamic with your mother, you know, the way she looked at you, you can get there pretty easily, right?
Yeah.
And that's what it is. That's what living with it is.
Yeah.
And integrating it into your being and the gift that it was, but it still is. You know, there's no yeah. other way to put it into perspective.
I think you're so right, but to me, it's almost like too painful.
I know, because the but that pain, like even when I just felt it,
yeah,
it's pain, but it's also like
they're there.
Well, yeah, but yeah. also like it's like it's honoring them.
Yeah,
like it reconnects you with them. Like it's not the pain of loss; it's the pain of missing.
Yeah,
and that's different. Like they're already gone, but it's okay to miss people. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah,
it's. I don't think it's like a trauma of like re-triggering the moment they go away or they die, but it's sort of like reconnecting with the feelings that were good,
yeah.
but it's a missing thing. And I think that's okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
fucking Barbara, Mark, Maren Walters. But I'm happy to hear that because I, you know, I do feel like there's so many things and I do believe this, like taking the things that people, you know, have given you that have made you, you know, yeah. that made you special. Like I do sort of talk about, you know, I've just started talking about it on my show a little bit, like, you know, that my dad was the funny one and my sister was the heart and my mom was the music. And like, and I know that they are probably the three most, they built me.
Yeah.
You know?
Exactly. Yeah.
And I know that I am like them, you know what I mean?
Yes.
Like
those are the good things.
But like thinking about some of that, I mean, it's so overwhelming. What you're,
yeah.
that feeling you're talking about,
yeah.
it's so overwhelming.
When there's so much too, like, you know, my parents are still hanging on.
Yeah.
You know, I have had to put a couple of cats down that I loved a lot.
Yeah.
You know, and Lynn's gone, you know, and it's just fucking life though, you know,
yeah.
and it's like, you don't have to live in those spaces. And usually, you know, when they come up, and I'm closing my show with this now about this. Mm-hmm. About when it comes, it's triggered by something. Mm-hmm. Is that the thing that I focus in on? Is that you let it happen as much as you can, and it's almost like a check-in, man. It doesn't, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
It doesn't have to be like, ugh, why, you know? Because you're through that,
yeah.
You know, but it's just sort of like a check-in, and I think if you frame it around reconnecting with your feelings for that person, yeah. then it becomes something different. You know what I mean? But the problem is, like, even that little bit that came up for me, like, you know, then it, when it comes up, it's still pulling at you. It's like, well, let's go in. You're like, I can't. I have things to do. We'll do.
I don't know. It's.
Maybe, we're okay.
Who needs to do therapy when you can just do a podcast?
Oh, well, it's great talking to you.
Yeah.
You feel all right?
Ah, oh, fucking. Yeah. Can you go back to the hotel?
And cry?
I might. I like that. I like laying in a cold hotel room just...
just balling?
Lightly, not even rocking back and forth, just sort of rolling back and forth.
Yeah.
With a couple.
Yeah.
I don't know. I feel like... I don't know. Like, I'm always worried to, like, talk to somebody when it's going to be for more than 15 minutes yeah. because it could go. Yeah,
no, this is great. We talked for a while.
I feel like we did pretty good. You
we
know?
Did
like,
great.
I didn't even, you know, I only had to spritz 3 times.
All right. Well, it was a great deal of emotional fun talking to you.
Yeah. Thank you for having me.
Yeah. Oh, my God. Right? It got to a pretty place. Got pretty heavy. Somebody somewhere is streaming on Max. Hang out for a minute, folks.
Robinhood bietet Ihnen Zugang zum US-Aktienmarkt. Sie können Krypto zu niedrigen Kosten kaufen und verkaufen. Alles an einem Ort. Auf Robinhood. Investment- und Kryptowertedienstleistungen für EU-Kunden werden von der Robinhood Europe UAB angeboten, die von der Zentralbank Litauens als Finanzmakler und Kryptowertedienstleister zugelassen ist und deren Aufsicht unterliegt. Termingeschäfte auf US-Aktien und ETF-Token bergen ein erhebliches Risiko und sind nicht für alle Anleger geeignet. Bitte überlegen Sie sich sorgfältig, ob Investments in derartige Finanzinstrumente mit Blick auf Ihre Erfahrung, Risikotoleranz und Finanzlage für Sie geeignet sind. Beachten Sie die geltenden Beschränkungen und Zulassungsvoraussetzungen.
Kein Bock mehr auf Gelaber? Hier sind Marilena und Keno, die Hosts von Shift, Häfen, Logistik, Zukunft, ein Podcast von Bremenports.
In dem wir auch labern, aber mit Menschen, die in Sachen Klima und Transformation wirklich was bewegen wollen.
Die Hafen- und Logistikbranche ändert sich rasant. Moderne Antriebe, klimafreundliche Lieferketten, Berichtspflichten, immer mehr Erwartungen.
Aber grün ist das neue Normal.
Wir freuen uns, wenn ihr reinhört. Shift. Häfen, Logistik, Zukunft.
Ein Podcast von Bremen Ports und Bergholz Media.
Okay, as I mentioned, I just did my HBO special taping at the BAM Harvey Theater in Brooklyn. And 10 years ago this month, I was at the BAM Opera House to record a live episode with Fresh Air's Terry Gross.
So you knew how to have fun.
That's a good question. Do I know how to have fun?
Did you then and do you now? Sure, let's expand
know.
It.
Yeah, it's not probably what I'm most famous for. You know, I'm probably, you know, in some ways better at working than I am at, like, relaxing.
Right. But do you know how to have fun? And
yeah, maybe.
What do you do for...
For fun? I go to the movies, go to concerts... Uh-huh.
How are you
listen
with
to you.
Oh, you do listen to me? Thank
yeah.
you.
Yeah, I listen nice. To you a lot. I think you're wonderful. Oh. I listen to your podcast. I watch your show. I
Thank
have your
you.
Comedy album. Okay. No, I think you're wonderful. I'm so glad for this opportunity to talk with you.
I'm flattered and humbled.
And can I get a chance to ask you a question?
In a minute. I know how that goes. I'm trying to hold the line, Terry. These are professional boundaries. I'm the questioner.
Okay.
But like I'm sort of a. So how are you with Joy? Do you? I'm asking this because this is all I know. Look, you know, we do. You know, I became an interviewer for reasons that had nothing to do with interviewing. I ended up there, and you know, I know what my emotional why I do it and how I ended up here. So like right now, personally, I'm wrestling with, and I don't know if you feel this way, you say you work all the time, but you talk to people professionally and, you know, you elicit things from them and you draw people out. And for the reason you said before is to you know, make lives better by kind of letting people tell who they are. But do you get something out of that emotionally? Because I find in my life that I'm capable of a almost deeper intimacy with...
That was the question I was going to ask you.
Well, I'm asking you first.
Okay. Yes.
That's one of our greatest episodes, and you can listen to it for free on whatever podcast platform you're using. It's episode 604 with Terry Gross. To get every episode of WTF ad-free, sign up for WTF Plus. Just go to the link in the episode description and go to WTFpod.com and click on WTF Plus. And a reminder before we go, this podcast is hosted by Acast. This guitar, I tried to lay down a track. It got a little confusing somewhere about a third of the way through, but I like it. All right. Okay. Monkey and LaFonda, Cat Angels Everywhere.